Hey, podcast listeners, it's Tyrone here, and we've got a great episode for you from the archives with Prue Muirhead. This episode was first aired back in 2017, and I hope you enjoy it.
We looked at moving into a caravan and renting our home out for $350 a week, which of course is $18,000 a year, which we wouldn't have had at the time. So $18,000 would be a massive amount of money for us to suddenly have extra income if we lived in a caravan.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors, find out more about their stories, mindset and strategy. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're talking to 2010 Property Investor of the Year, Prue Muirhead, who at 19 began her property investing journey off the back of a career as a DJ. Now, she's the owner of Muirhead Property Management and currently has 18 investment properties in her portfolio. All it took was a sign to give Muirhead a tilt towards the right path. We'll hear about how she turned from DJ into a property investor and businesswoman, and how property investing is like playing a game Monopoly.
Probably normally it would be gym in the morning. I obviously respond to emails and phone calls then. I'm always on realestate.com, probably like everyone else that's listening to you, on and off realestate.com, domain.com and all your search engines. Daily I have lunch with my husband because we do work together in the property management business. I do spend a great deal of time with my kids. I love watching them play sports, so that's whenever that's on. And family meal at night. And it's a pretty great life, really. And like I said, it's a lot different to what it was 10 years ago when we were under lots of pressure and I had this DJ business and no income. And it wasn't a good time. So I'm so pleased to be in a different era of my life. It's all about having freedom to see the kids, to be honest with you, because I made a couple of errors early in life. I gave birth to two beautiful children and went back to work the day I gave birth to them. And I probably have felt guilt for that my entire life until I recognised it when they were 8 and 10. And thankfully, I got into property by then. So I just went, this is ridiculous. I'm making more money in capital growth of just two properties than going to work full-time for myself. And so I flipped it on itself and sold the business for equipment value only and travelled the country for a couple of years. So, yeah, I know, it's funny, but I think life's for learning. And I certainly had a big lesson there.
Starting off with nothing, Muirhead dramatically turned her life around. Since then, she has accumulated 18 investment properties and began the property management business with her husband.
I'm a part-time lecturer at for property investing at TAFE SA, and 3 years ago I started a business called Muirhead Property Management in Adelaide. So that's pretty much my background. But as far as bragging, I guess most people find me most interesting because I was a disc jockey for 15 years, had an incredibly low combined income with my husband. We had no super, nothing set up for our future. And in 2002, we went to buy our very first investment property and was told by Westpac we couldn't even afford our own home. By 2006, I purchased our very first investment property, and in 2010, 4 years later, I actually won your investment properties Property Investor of the Year, which is a fantastic magazine. And of course, I won that with 14 positive geared properties, and 2010 and 12 travelled Australia, homeschooling our kids in a caravan. And then, of course, like I said, 2014 started Muirhead Property Management, and I currently own 18 positive geared properties. So life's a lot different to what it was 10 years ago.
When it comes to investing in property, she describes herself as a calculated risk taker.
Property is actually a bit of a hobby for me. It's a bit like a game of Monopoly. I certainly take calculated risks. So I don't know whether you'd call me a risk taker. I know other people perhaps would find it hard to jump at some of the investments that I've bought. But I've never really been a normal investor, and I've been chasing the income. So I've always been chasing the positive geared properties rather than negative geared, because we've never had the income to write off the depreciations or any of the expenses that go with property. So I've had to have some positive geared to put money in my pocket, not take money out. So, but I'd say I'm a calculated risk property investor.
With a steady interest in music while growing up, she naturally turned to DJing as a primary source of income. However, on discovering that the risks outweighed the gains within that industry, she eventually turned to property investing.
So I was born in Pinneroo, which is virtually on the border of South Australia and Victoria. Moved to Adelaide, didn't even finish year 12, did year 11. I worked for a furniture removalist company for 7 years. And then, like I said, I was a disc jockey for 15 years. So I always wanted to make my living on my saxophone. And when I left school, I thought, well, I'll try and get into the police band. And I had open heart surgery as a teenager. So they said to me at that stage, I was a risk. So DJing became something I thought, I reckon I could make some money in DJing. So I did that for 15 years. And by the time I grew this business to 26 staff, it was ridiculously expensive business. I mean, we had to make our living one night of the week, 6 months per year when the sun shines on a Saturday. Really, really tough industry to be in. And because we were carrying, I was carrying full-time staff, road crew, as well as, you know, all the DJs. So you need all the guys working as well as myself in the summer months, and then you're trying to keep them for winter and there's no work. So it was a really interesting time. So needless to say that now in business I will not have staff again, because they're lovely. I'm sure they're lovely people and there's some fantastic ones out there, but the stories are crazy. But it blew me away when I did win Property Investor of the Year in 2010, because to be honest with you, all I was trying to do was make a better life. Well, I guess that I used to hook up a trailer, like a lot of wedding and corporate events. I did do a couple of school formals, but I was in my early 20s and decided that teenagers didn't expect to see some 20-year-old female standing up there. So I used to put my guys into those. But when it came to weddings and corporate events, I used to hook up my trailer with all of my speakers, PA gear, karaoke machines, whatever the client wanted. I'd go down to, I was in Adelaide, so I'd go down to all the, probably by the time I sold the business, we're in nearly every five-star venue in Adelaide with our staff. I'd just turn up, set up about an hour or two before all the PA gear. And then when all the guests had arrived, I'd introduce, say, if it was a wedding, I'd introduce the bridal party, I'd MC, you know, master of ceremonies. I'd take control of that as well as all the music. And it was really good. I did enjoy that. It was lots of fun. I guess it goes down the same line as my saxophone. I was in a band when I was younger with my brothers, and it was fantastic fun. So it was on that same line, but there is a due date, and unfortunately I think it should be a second income, not your main source of income, and that's what I learnt. But at the end of the day, I'm exactly what people would expect me to do. I was playing all the music for everyone. I'd stop the music and I'd play with the guests. You know, I'd get them to do aerobics, congas, zorbas, teach them dances, all sorts of crazy things. And then I'd come home by about 2 o'clock in the morning with my trailer on, after I'd unpacked all the gear in my black suit, and try and go to bed straight away, which is virtually impossible because you're always hyped up after a function. But it was good. It was good for the time. But I did do that for 15 years. We're on a far less than average income, far, far, far less than average income. And thankfully it took a conversation over the Sunday Mail once, and I said to Andy, if you had your life again, what would you change? And he said, I would have got a trade. And I said, honey, you're 37, you go off and get your trade. I mean, it was my business anyway. He joined me halfway through. So I sort of just thought, well, this is ridiculous. I'm making more money in capital growth from just two properties at that time we had, than running this business and working myself to the bone. So thankfully I was, you know, it took 12 months, but we sold it for equipment value. So it certainly didn't set us up. It just paid off all of our debts pretty much for that particular, for the business. But, you know, if I didn't take the risk in being a DJ and having that business, I might have found that I'd be working for a good income and I didn't have my back against the wall. It's when your back's against the wall and you don't have the income that you have to think of other ways around this. You know, what am I going to do? This isn't working. Whereas if I think people sometimes when they're in a comfortable world find it too easy to just sit on their hands and do nothing, whereas I had to do something.
Mirahead's parents had an unintentional impact on her while she was young.
No, I've always been a really good saver. I can live really frugally, and I sort of always have, but I've just always been a really good saver and I don't know what it is. But my parents were real estate agents, so I guess that's the backbone to it, but it used to drive me crazy. They used to talk about real estate around the dining table and I used to hate it. So I think somehow that information did sink in. But they used to sell real estate, but in their sidelines, they used to buy blocks of units and put them on separate titles. That was sort of back in the 70s when most blocks of units were all on one title. So you could buy a block of units for a lot less than, so if you buy a block of four units, you'd buy them If all of them were, you know, if you times the unit, say 200,000, if you had four of them, you'd think it'd be worth 800,000. But if they're on one title, you could actually buy them for, say, 600, 500, because, of course, less people can afford a $500,000 transaction than a $200,000. Does that make sense, what I've just said? English is not my my forte. But anyway, so they used to buy blocks of units, and in the end, they both retired at 47. But as a child, no, I used to hate them talking about real estate, but I think I certainly have, as much as I've ended up in a kind of real estate way, I vowed and declared I'd never be a real estate salesperson, and I have never done that. We're just still a property manager now, thankfully. But as far as they're concerned, they probably were a massive influence without realising it at the time.
Coming up after a break, we'll delve into Mirahead's property investing journey.
We're in an incredibly low income. We had no superannuation at all. And I recognised something had to change. It would end up with virtually nothing.
How she grew her property portfolio.
I remember working out if I added the returns of 5% plus the fact it was, would go up in capital growth about 7%, that 7% plus 5% equals 12% per year, that I was better off to own that than not.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. If you've ever gone through a difficult period in your life, turned on the radio and had a sign that pointed you in the right direction, Mirahead can relate. That was how her property investing journey began.
We're in an incredibly low income. We had no superannuation at all. And I recognised something had to change. It would end up with virtually nothing. And then in 2002, we went to buy our very first investment property in Westpac said, as I mentioned, that we couldn't even afford our own home. So we had 1 month to work out what on earth we were going to do. So there we were about to hopefully buy our very first investment property to be told you can't even keep your own home that you're living in, your principal place of residence. So we had like 1 month to work out what we were going to be doing. So we looked at moving into a caravan and renting our home out for $350 a week, which of course is $18,000 a year, which we wouldn't have had at the time. So $18,000 would be a massive amount of money for us to suddenly have extra income if we lived in a caravan. So to be honest with you, that's pretty much how the investing journey started. So like magic, there was this radio advert on about a week later, and it said, if you're having trouble loaning money, call us. And so I called them, and of course, the rest is pretty much history. They were selling, and back then it was quite easy to get low doc loans, low documentation loans, where you sign a piece of paper to say, "Yep, I earned $200,000," and it's a bit naughty, but I think it probably was $200,000 I wrote down, but I think at the time we're earning probably 20, you know, combined. It was ridiculously low, so that's why 18 for renting our own home was going to be good. And so I remember Andy and I signed this document to say we're earning $200,000. So they gave us the equity out of our own home, because we'd bought our own home for, at that stage, we'd been in the same house for about 10, 15 years. So we'd bought it for about $140,000 at the time. And at that stage, it was worth about $300,000, $350,000. So they gave us $100,000 or $150,000 in a line of credit. And with that, we were able to pay the loan off itself, off the home we were living in, as well as putting a deposit on an investment property. So the actual line of credit, really all I was doing was trying to keep up the repayments. So just like any home repayments, because we didn't have the income coming in, I ultimately was using the lender to pay back the lender, if that makes sense. So I was going further into debt to pay back the lender to hold the house, knowing that our principal place of residence was going up at about a rate of about 7% per year. So each year that house was going to be, you know, $15,000 to $20,000 more expensive compound, you know. So I knew that if I could just hold on to everything, that in the long run it'd be okay.
Her first investment property was purchased on a home turf, as many other investors are known to do. Taking a calculated risk, she realised this long-term investment would pay off.
The first investment property is quite an interesting one. I think we all like to buy close to home, and I'm no different. So the first one we bought was just, you know, the next suburb on from us. And it was a little two-bed house, and I remember it was on the market for $220,000, and at the time, the median house price in that area was probably about $280,000. Although this was a two-bedroom, it was fair enough. It should be well under median house price because it was smaller. And it was renting for about $220 a week, which is pretty standard 5% returns in Adelaide. Then I remember working out if I added the returns of 5% plus the fact it would go up in capital growth about 7%, that 7% plus 5% equals 12% per year, that I was better off to own that than not. So that's kind of where life sort of did a bit of a turnaround at that point, because I knew even though it was taking money out of my pocket to buy that investment property, in the long run, it was going to be a much better option.
Coming to her worst investing moments, it is clear that adversity has aided Muirhead and helped her learn important lessons.
I'm assuming you're talking about the moment in 2002 when Westpac said that we couldn't even afford our own home. That was pretty much the worst investment moment. And that's our principal place of residence. And we even spent our kids' piggy bank. I think they both had about $500. They were 2 and 4, by the way, so they were young. And they had, over their birthdays and Christmases, you know, grandparents, whomever gives them cash every so often. So they didn't spend it at 2 and 4. So we spent it and bought, you know, just food. It was just a horrible, horrible time. And, you know, thankfully things did change when I heard that advertisement. But my second personal worst moment would be going back to work to my full-time DJ business the day I gave birth to my kids. I'll never forgive myself, hence why we travelled Australia when our finances had changed in 2010, 11 and 12. So it was pretty cool. But I think, sadly, those worst moments led us to where we are today. So I don't know. Do things happen for a reason? Maybe they do.
Everything clicked for her while lying awake in bed one night.
So the DJ business, we purchased a bottom-end property, a commercial property in Adelaide, in the Adelaide CBD, to run the business from. And it was an interesting time. I mean, I think outside the square, and I guess if you knew my portfolio, you probably would. Nothing's the same in what we own. But this particular one was a commercial building, and the neighbouring company, it was Dave and Goliath, their property was about 45 times bigger than ours, to give you some sort of scope on this. And they wanted us to sign over a right-of-way that we didn't need. So we could still access the back of our property through one half of the right-of-way. The second half of the right-of-way went through their property. And they were bullying us pretty much, wanting us to sign over this right-of-way. And thankfully, they came in one day when Andy was in the office in the commercial building and pretty much tried to get him to sign something. And thankfully, he didn't, right? So what happened? So then we sort of went into negotiation and I said, well, give us money. Because we didn't have any, obviously. So I'm thinking, well, if you're going to do something, it's on our title, give us money. They wouldn't give us money. And they were a car dealer. And so we said, well, give us a car. And they wouldn't. And then by this time, we'd already spent $3,500 on a solicitor. And it was just ridiculous. $3,500 to us was a massive amount because we just didn't have that sort of cash. And we knew that they could keep talking to us and it would just be, we'd just fold. So we stopped talking to them and they came back about 2 years later and they said, oh, they're going to build a wall on it and then make us sue them and all this. It got really nasty. And I remember one night in bed, I went, oh my God, land. You know, they want us to sign over some land, which is right of way because they're going to build over it. They want us to sign over this land. Well, why don't they give us land? Because they're 47 times bigger than we are, they could give us land. They hadn't built the development, the four-story building yet. And so we went to a solicitor and said, look, what do we do here? We don't want to pay your fee. And they said, oh, that's okay. What we'll do, we'll go to them and say, if you want to talk to the Muirheads, which, of course, is my surname, Andy, my surname, and if you want to talk to the Muirheads, you've got to pay my fee. So this big company said, okay, well, we'll pay your solicitor's fee. So the second time around, they were paying our solicitor's fee. So we had sort of had nothing to lose. And of course, the solicitor said, what do you want now? I said, well, ask them if they'll give us land. And they came back and said, yes. So we gained land on our title another almost half, about 40% larger, our land was 40% larger, and then 2 years later sold as a development site in the city, Adelaide CBD. So it was a really, really bizarre. It was just like, oh my God, they're not going to give us anything. And we were like a stalemate. And it could have been really nasty. But we ended up with, I don't know, they probably gave us about $150,000 to $200,000 worth of land.
A mother first, a property investor, and businesswoman second, Mary Head says that time is her most important asset.
Oh, they're 18 and 16, really good, I don't know. Well, some places, they're both volleyball players, so my daughter plays league and she's played for Australia 6 times and captained the country as a junior, and she's really a bit of a gun, and my son plays volleyball for the state, and I don't know, it's just, I just love my kids, yep, just love them. But I think I'm no different to any other mum. I know some people, maybe one of your questions may have been, you know, what's the end goal? There kind of isn't one for me. Mine has always been to just have time, you know, just have time with the kids, and property just happens to be there and happens to be my hobby. But I do, in saying that, it is on my bucket list to do a development. It is very, quite important to me, as well as getting back in a caravan and travelling Australia with Andy. I won't be able to take the kids, they'll be too old. I would like to develop something because everything we've done so far has been like buy, renovate and hold, or buy, hold and put on separate titles, hold. You know, like it's been a lot of that, whereas I've never done a development other than built our own home. So we're on the same block that same house we're going to rent out for $350 a week. We still live on that block in a new home, which we moved into 12 months ago. But so I've never done any developments, you know, where you knock a house down and build 2 or 3. I don't believe there's money in going from 1 to 2. I need to buy a block, that a house where I go from 1 to 3.
So, inspired by this story and what Prue Muirhead is excited about today, we'll continue the conversation going in a future episode of Property Investory, where we'll hear about how to apply Muirhead's strategy.
I've just used each property as a bank, so I just don't sell them to not pay capital gains tax. I buy positive geared properties, so that obviously puts money into my pocket, not out of it.
Her success habits for property investing.
So I'm sort of already committing to the process. I just have to work out how to get to the end goal.
And that's next time on a future episode of Property Investory.